shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
About the size of Texas.
Hold on for a minute. I was just talking to Dan about this. Welcome back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news talking. Oh, I thought I wasn't going to do that anymore.
That's what you said.
All right. Anyway, truth is our bitch. Now, Bud, what was your question?
This asteroid that you was talking to Dan about, what if it's the size of Texas?
Now, by the way, and I'll answer your question, we do have on the line Dean Wheeler, who is with his wife, Emerelda. They are at Gavin's Club, I think, in San Francisco. We also have with us as well General Galen Shaw, who is going to be speaking to us from his home in Arizona. And General Shaw, we don't yet have on the line. Let me get Dean. Dean?
Hi, Phil, yeah.
Okay, so in any event, let's get off all this stuff about the Taliban and get off all this nonsense that I was talking about, these other issues having to do with doomsday. You have a very specific sense of doomsday and Mayan doomsday and that kind of thing?
Well, I do. I think that we have to respect the ancient religions because they have led the way. Hold on for a minute. Was she whispering again?
Are you? Do you need to get back to what your wife's doing?
No, I don't. You always ask me that, and I always tell you I'm fine. But understand, please, that while I am needed by other radio stations to comment on holistic health issues as well as metaphysical issues, I also have a wife that is embarking on a singing career, and I simply must oversee every aspect of that.
And you really need to, huh?
If you're going to start talking to me yet again, Phil, about how I'm a controlling and jealous guy...
Well, you've been going on about this horn player for a long time.
The horn player gets her, I told you, what he does for her.
General Galen Shaw...
Whoa, hold on. Did you... What are you, just ignoring me like I'm a freak? Like I'm... Oh, yeah. Okay, thanks, freak.
No, I heard what you said. I think the horn player, if he's scoring her pills, you got problems.
Thanks a lot, Phil.
Oh, God, Phil.
Thank you very much. Okay, I'm arrested.
Well, you've been the guy that's been talking about how he's the guy that scores.
Phil, I'll handle it, Dean.
Would you please?
First of all, he said she's the one that gives him the pill. So he didn't say it out loud.
Will you get out of here with whispering it? Don't tell me that I'm causing you problems, man. You cause yourself problems. General Galen Shaw is on the line.
Well, you know something? I've got to get up front because they are slapping her on the back and congratulating her on a great set, and I need to be a part of that. And
I know you want to tell her she did a good job.
No, I want to be up there getting congratulated, too. So look at this. I'm back here like I'm a loser talking to you on your little radio show. I got a wife that's about to bust out big. She's about to be the next... she's not going to be fat like her, but Adele... And
okay, fine. Go ahead and...
I'll be right back. No, in fact, I don't have to be right. I've got the phone with me. Get out of my way. Get out of my way. I'm going up to my wife.
All right. General Galen Shaw, sir, how are you?
Hello, Phil.
All right, sir, you did talk to J.D. Hardwick, who is a member of what?
J.D. Hardwick and his brother Colin were both members of the Jericho Group, which was a group of people. And thank you for dropping that jazz club out of my ear.
What, hold on. What happened to Dean?
I got to get him back. Apparently he hung up because he was introducing his wife to record executives.
Oh, isn't that great? Well, would you get him back on?
Yes, and I understand the need to speak to that man, I guess. I don't know. It sounds very, very wrong to me. But if you can keep the jazz club to a minimum, because I can hear all kinds of profanity. And, well, there it is again.
Can we turn that down?
I feel I'm back. I'm sorry, but I had to hang up on you. And I respect you and I admire you, but your phone number was very visible on my screen, and a lot of people recognize that as your show, and they think I'm a little small time for that, and so I did hang up.
I understand.
All right, so, oh, hold on. She's singing again. May I continue?
Go ahead, General.
First of all, wait, hold on just. Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby, that's exactly how I taught you. You're just like an angel. Yeah. May I speak, Mr. Hendry?
Yes, you may.
Don't you tell me to shut up. Hold on, I'm sorry, Jen. Do, 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 do. Come on, you gotta emphasize that note. Yeah, there you go. Just like you're throwing it up. Just like I taught you, baby.
You want to shut your mouth in front of us to the show?
Why don't you blow it at you? Mr. Henry, I'm going to have to decline your invitation.
I'm sorry.
Wait, hold on. Oh, that horn player. I hate that guy's guts. Listen to that. Yeah, that's it. Why don't we just go ahead and put an amplifier in that guy and really destroy every... thank you and good night, Mr. Henry.
General Shaw.
No, I'm...
I want to have control.
No. Don't do...
I want a perfect body.
You got a perfect body, honey.
I want a perfect soul.
Yeah. That's how I taught her. That's my wife. Shut your hole! Blow it at you. Yeah, baby.
Okay, Dean, thanks a lot for nothing.
Who's this?
Phil Henry, you're on my show?
Oh, I'm sorry, Phil. I've got... Yeah, I won't be able to do it tonight, but I can tell you...
So there's two guests gone, man, because of one jackass with a wife with a singing career.
And not much of a singer, I can tell you. I don't know the song she was singing, but I know what she was going for. And it was that sort of jazz lick, that jazz chop.
Meaning lick?
Not in the sense that you mean it, you freak. Oh, you freak. It was like this, if you know this. You know, it's sort of just kind of lazy. The shadow of... You see what I mean, Phil? So it's a very lazy thing.
I know that lazy thing has been coming into play lately. I've heard that with Brett Morrison on those Lion games.
Yeah, nobody understands what he's saying.
Well, I don't know anything about him or whatever game you're talking about. I'm saying that relaxed is best. Relax into it.
That's what she said.
Well, are you going to do something about it, or am I?
Bud, get out of here.
What, Rick?
Get out of here.
Thank you.
Can I go see how he's doing?
Yeah, you go ahead. What is it with you? His babysitter or something?
I don't know.
Those two, you'd be way better off.
Don't give me advice, okay?
Well,
just don't give me any advice, all right? So anyway, about the singing?
Well, I'm sure you have other things you need to do.
I do, but go ahead.
I was going to say, Phil, that the relaxed singing... Oh, he's back in here now.
Yeah, Robert talked me back into coming back in.
I told you to get out of here, didn't I?
Okay, I'm leaving. Let me go.
Never mind.
Thank you. All right, getting back to where it was that we was when we was, world-famous Phil Henry Show, we were talking about Haley's Comet, or Bally's Comet, if you're in Vegas. Anyway,
Not funny.
Thank you. So the New York Times trying to make a joke out of Haley's Comet to try to offset the statements of this French astronomer that created such fear when he said that there was a certain... a gas that was in the tail of Halley's Comet that could prove fatal to every living thing, every Christian soul on Earth. Now, obviously, the public picked up on this and got frightened. The New York Times, in quoting another astronomer, basically made light, this other astronomer saying you could take all the gases that were in Halley's Comet and put them into a suitcase, meaning that there was not enough, there weren't that many parts per, you know, millimeter or parts per square inch or whatever that would harm a human being. So things got worse. In a somewhat misguided attempt to allay fears, the director of the Cambridge Observatory, Sir Robert S. Ball, quoted English astronomy doyen Sir John Herschel as saying that the whole comet could be squeezed into a suitcase, and then, you know, the New York Times did what they did. So along come the charlatans now, because people are thinking that they're going to be poisoned by the tail of Halley's Comet. And the charlatans are selling comet pills that would supposedly protect against the effects of the poison. Churches held all-night prayer vigils, and doomsayers wrote to the Royal Greenwich Observatory of England to say that the comet would cause massive tides across the Americas as the Pacific emptied itself into the Atlantic. As a rule of thumb, anything that invokes gravity or tides to end the world or trigger volcanoes and earthquakes is bound to be wrong because gravity is the weakest force of nature. Remember how a magnet picks up an iron tack? That's the small magnet defeating the entire Earth's gravity. Whatever that means.
I don't understand it either.
No, I don't either, and I don't do. As dawn arrived on May 20th, 1910, the world had not ended. Oceans had not emptied. People had not choked. Though tragically, 16-year-old Amy Hopkins lost her life falling from a roof while watching the comet with friends. With doomsday averted for all but Amy's parents, stories of Halley's Comet disappeared from the papers and things carried on as normal. Now, a century later, the mania is back for the Mayan apocalypse. People around the world are stockpiling food and survival equipment. In China, doomsday rumor mongers are reportedly being arrested. It is a sad state of affairs that we've clearly not learned from the folly of 1910. This, by the way, is a piece written by a man named Stuart Clark, the author of The Sensorium of God, a novel featuring Edmund Halley. Although Halley's Comet did not trigger an apocalypse, it does have something important to teach us about prophecy. Edmund Halley astonished the 18th century world by predicting the return of the comet that now bears his name. He used Newton's law of gravity to achieve the feat. At a stroke, he proved that science could do what astrologers and prophets had always claimed but failed to achieve, to predict a future occurrence. The ability to predict future events is a powerful property of classical physics. It relies on measurement and the clockwork rigidity of certain physical laws. Without these, prediction is impossible, even within a science. So if someone claims to have made a prediction or even a prophecy, ask what exactly has been measured. What exactly has been calculated? What exactly has been predicted? If the answer to any of these is effectively not sure or nothing, or better yet, in the context of our society, think about it or it stands to reason, those are another couple of good ones, then disbelieve it. The Mayans made no prediction that the world will end on the 21st of 2012, but science tells us with some certainty that Halley's Comet will be back in 2061.
Hey.
You guys are standing at the door. All right, come on, sit down.
What do you mean, come on and sit down? He said that's what she said.
Don't worry about it. He'll behave. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. We've lost our guests. That's okay. I got a lot of more stuff to talk about you too. So stick around.
Truth is our bitch.
Thanks a lot, Phil Hendry Show. Lips, huh? So anyway, so what are we talking about, Doomsday?
Well, you're talking about these asteroids, and you mentioned something on the show yesterday that I thought was interesting, and Ron Tarter and you got into an argument about that.
Yeah, and I'm just saying what I heard a paleontologist say.
Well, tell the people, because the people that are listening...
Well, all right, here. Asteroids hitting the Earth, this is another thing that we think. You know, we've got movies based on an asteroid hits the Earth and the Earth blows up and the climate changes and all life is dead and that's what happened to the dinosaurs, so why wouldn't it happen to us? Well, guess what? They're now believing that that did not happen to the dinosaurs, that that's a load of horse dung, that an asteroid hitting the Earth, even a comet hitting the Earth, may change conditions in the short term. We know, for instance... we've had volcanic events that have created a change in weather conditions for a period of a year or two or three. There was a volcanic explosion in the 6th century in the South Pacific that created what they called a dry fog in Europe. It was a mist. It was dirt is what it was. It was particles of earth that was clouding the sun. And for long stretches of time in Europe, people would write about how the sun has been blotted from the sky. You know, one of the things about historical writing, if it is not completely accurate, it tends to get blown up over time. And you would swear to God that the world was coming to an end in the most graphic and horrific terms when you read the writings of these people. But in point of fact, the more specific reporting was, well, you know, it was dirty air and it was cloudy and it got cold and there were some small shifts in weather. The explosion of the volcano Krakatoa in the 19th century caused a similar kind of a particle pollution, if you will, in the Earth. You know, and so we've also had something called the Little Ice Age, which was a dramatic shift in weather conditions. Now, none of this is the comment on climate change. I don't do that. I'm talking about human psychology, which is far more interesting to me. I could give a sweet Jesus whether or not the bloody climate's changing. I don't know. If it is, let's do something about it. I'm sure that it is. I'm sure that the scientists know what they're talking about. I love people, but I love what motivates people even more. And it's embarrassing sometimes to watch the human race and the way it reacts to things. Most of the time, there is pride in what we do. I see the human race doing heroic things all the time, great things. But we do tend to act like real jackasses. And one of the ways that we act like a jackass is this whole doomsday thing. It could very well be that somebody once wrote, we want to share the death experience. We fear death. We all fear death. And every now and again, we want to share that experience with others. We want to see if everybody else is sort of checking it out the way we're checking it out. Death waits for us all, you know.
Death waits for no man. Yay.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Death waits for no man. Yay.
Yeah, that could be a radio show.
A bit like a movie, Death Waits for No Man. Yay!
Is that right?
Yeah.
Anyway,
What a couple of meatheads. What are you laughing at?
I haven't heard that term meathead in a long time.
Well, they are meatheads. Meat.
Yeah, the operable word being meat.
Are you going to do something about it, or do I have to?
Take it easy, Margaret. I'm not throwing anybody out. Shut up, bud.
You mean you're not going to punish him for saying meat and looking me up and down?
No, I'm not, because I don't think that's what he was doing. All right, now, here's the thing that I want to say. The dinosaurs, it is now said by paleontologists, a great many, many are coming around to this way of thinking, and plus the fossil record supports this. The dinosaurs didn't die from an asteroid, although there was an asteroid event. There was a large explosive event that happened around this certain period of time, some 65 million years ago. But we know now that the dinosaurs didn't all die out at once, that they died out over a period of millions of years, and that there were some dinosaurs left over while there were some other ones that were dead. This is what happened. We also know that the dinosaur fossil record lies below in the strata, and this is how they can tell certain events by looking at the Earth's crust. And some of these core samples, as they're called, are taken in the Antarctic. Some are taken in the Arctic, where you can dig way down through the frozen Earth and find, I don't know, the Arctic, there is no Earth, it's just ice.
What about the Arctic Circle?
What about it?
There's no dirt?
There's no dirt up there, man.
Yeah, there is. What about Canada?
Yeah, other than Canada, okay? Canada's got dirt. The Arctic polar cap is a polar cap. It's ice.
So there's no... Are you kidding?
What about Santa... Well, I know Santa Claus doesn't exist, but you see, he would live on ice.
Yes, it's just ice. It's not it's not a continent or an island of any kind. It's ice.
Well, what's Antarctica?
That's a continent. That's dirt. That's terra firma with a lot of frozen, you know, stuff. All right, so in any event, we now know that the fossil record lies below this strata of carbon, which represents the asteroid hitting the Earth, meaning the dinosaurs died out in large measure before the asteroid ever hit.
What killed them?
What killed them? Very good question. And what killed them over a period of many millions of years? Very good question. Paleontologists now believe it was good old-fashioned, nothing more than disease. Because what had happened during that particular period, land bridges began to reemerge between continents. Perhaps there was, not the melting of ice. Perhaps there was a coming ice age that water was drying up something. But nonetheless, the land bridge between North America and Asia and Africa and Europe existed. Now, we know that camels, along with other animals like mastodons, these large elephants, originated in North America, and they traveled across the land bridge into Asia.
What? You're nuts. Everyone knows that those animals come from Africa and places like that.
Yeah, out of Africa.
Not talking about out of Africa when it comes to freaking camels. Camels are out of North America. Okay?
What?
Look at man, I'm not going to explain this stuff. The fact is that camels, a lot of animals evolved here in North America, and others evolved elsewhere. All right, so There's the music again. Why don't you guys let me explain stuff?
You better start spitting it out a little bit faster, Phil, because we all have questions.
Yeah, the out-of-Africa theory has been challenged by you.
Don't you know the out-of-Africa is where the people came from?
Yes, but not camels. I'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Where did I'd walk a mile for a camel come from? You got it. Bud's diary.
You dirty, filthy woman.
You owed me one.
I'd walk a mile for a camel came from Bud's diary.
Phil Henry.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
You have a big scrunched-up look on your face.
Yes, I do. I have a scrunched-up look on my face because I have just transferred a whole bunch of money from one account into another account because it's tax time. I know you don't think it's tax time. It probably isn't tax time for you. It's coming up on the end of the year tax time for me. And I have my accountant, Mitch, who's he's a great guy, and he's a guy that doesn't let me get away with murder. Like, for instance, if I want to, say, steal the company funds and go to South America, he won't let me do that. He'll call the police.
What a backstabber.
I know. You know, what are you going to do, man? And I thought the guy was a pal. But in point of fact, what I was doing was I was transferring money because in order to... I did something. I don't think I've ever really talked to you guys about this. But this year, I purchased my company outright. I was a partner in the business, and I bought it outright, which I was very happy to do, but it cost a lot of money. It even cost it cost so much money to do it that I had to liquefy,
Now, what does that mean, talk about liquid?
That means that it's fluid. You've made it liquid, and I don't know anything about business, but it's...
You liquefy asset, meaning you turn funds into liquid. If it's just a stock or a bond, or if it's a retirement account or whatever it is, and it's just sitting there on paper, that's one thing. To make it actually liquid, meaning you can spend it, you turn it into money, right?
Phil, you don't have to rub your fingers together and go money like I'm Yaphet Kotto in Alien. I know what you mean.
Yaphet Kotto in Alien.
Yeah, that's when the robot said no money.
Yes, you're treating me like... What, do you think you're the robot and I'm the mechanic? I think it's the other way around. What are you laughing at?
I was just thinking about being the mechanic and being the robot. I'd rather be the robot because the mechanic is the guy that had his... No, it wasn't the guy. That wasn't it.
No, the guy that got his guts blowed up, he was a scientist.
Well, everybody died. What difference does it make?
Well, at least the robot died. Well, you're right. The robot got
his head beat in by Sigourney Weaver. The other guy, the mechanics, they got eaten.
Yeah, they got ate up by the alien, that's for sure.
I don't know that the alien ate them. The alien destroyed them. The alien eviscerated them and ate their brain. But I don't know that, quote-unquote, the alien ate them.
Ate their brain?
Yeah, that's how the alien got them, on account of it shot the second level of jaw of teeth.
Yeah, the alien got two level of teeth, see?
Will you guys get out of here with this stuff? I don't want to talk about what the alien did or didn't do. The alien has two levels of teeth. I know it does. I've seen it 85 million times. What difference? What are we talking about? All I want to say is the following thing. That I had to transfer a whole... You are the idiots that are asking me about what's liquid.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I mean. And I'm not explaining it anymore. So... I had to do that. I had to transfer a whole bunch of money just today into this account so we could get our taxes paid because I had to pay a hell of a lot of tax on that money that I took to purchase the company with. And I can see the emails now coming in from people who, far and wide, boy, your accountant must be a real idiot because here's all you have to do. Yeah, sure. Nothing against them. 99% of the mail that we get, 99% of the emails or messages, they're all wonderful people, all well-meaning folks, and oftentimes providing excellent advice and excellent input on certain things. But every now and again, you get the one guy, you know,
let me tell you how my accountant did it.
And then it'll say, signed so-and-so, Leavenworth Prison. And,
yeah, man, that's probably the guy. That's how the good accountant did him.
Are you serious?
Well, not literally. I mean, you know, but occasionally we get jail. I don't get any mail from jail from anybody telling me how to live. I'll give those guys that much credit, you know. Most of the time they'll say, hi, I'm in jail, so you know that but, you know, I'm not going to give you any life advice. All right, so that's that about that. Now, senators say Zero Dark 30 is, quote, grossly inaccurate. Did we already reference this, Falderall?
You talked a little bit about it.
Well, the Osama bin Laden manhunt film Zero Dark 30 came under fire Wednesday from a bipartisan group of senators. They're complaining that Sony Pictures is suggesting that torture actually got information from individuals that led to Osama bin Laden's capture. Now, this is a letter to studio chief Mike Linton from Senator Dianne Feinstein, Senator Carl Levin, and Senator John McCain. Feinstein and Levin, both Democrats, McCain, a Republican. They wrote that the movie directed by Catherine Bigelow improperly establishes a connection between enhanced interrogations and key intelligence. Now, wait a minute. They say that, quote, we write to express our deep disappointment with the movie Zero Dark 30. We believe the film is grossly inaccurate and misleading, and it suggested that torture resulted in information that led to the location of bin Laden. All right. Now, that's their complaint. They're not saying in this complaint that torture did not lead to information. They're saying that torture did not lead to information leading to the whereabouts of Osama bin Laden. Now, these are all members of the Senate Intelligence Committee. They stop short of specifying what action they'd like from Sony. Usually what studios do in this case is they'll add something at the end of the film, not a disclaimer, but it's a part of a sort of an epilogue statement saying, and, you know, we did not mean to suggest this or that. A spokesman for one of the senators confirmed they were hoping the studio would respond, but the lawmakers were leaving it to the studio to determine what action it would take. The senator's letter comes on the heels of other complaints in Washington that the filmmakers may have had access to improper government sources. So there's two major complaints with this film, Zero Dark 30, that the Defense Department gave improper access to the filmmaker. That is absolutely vigorously denied by the Defense Department, that no improper access was given. It's always a nerve-wracking thing. And it's two things. You worry about America's security, the security of America's intelligence, and you also have to take into consideration a United States senator with an opportunity to make a headline or two. I'm sorry, I hate to be cynical, but, you know, I don't think I'm far off the mark. I'm not saying every time a senator opens his mouth, he's hoping for big headlines. I'm one of the few that happens to think that people who work in Washington ought to be commended, not constantly, continuously, ad nauseum, until I want to puke, you know, derided.
Yeah, you're starting to get in politics. That guy's going to be mad at you.
What guy?
The guy that wrote on your Facebook page that he finally liked the show because he didn't want to hear you going on about George Bush.
You know what I think about that guy?
Now, come on, man. Now, you said...
I know. No, I know. But you know what I think about that guy? Here's what I think. He never would have said that had I not openly said what I said.
What? What are you talking about?
Yeah, that don't make no sense.
Wait a minute. When I came on the air and I said that I made a big mistake, and I believe I did make a big mistake, I made a huge mistake after 9/11 polluting the radio show with a lot of political opinion. I made a big mistake. I really did. Because the show was and is a humor show. It's a humor-driven show, okay? I'm not here to do anything other than try to get people through the day with a couple of laughs, even though we're on late at night and everyone's asleep. Now then.
Yeah, that bothered me right there, you know. See, that's bad.
Yeah, just don't get political, Phil.
I'm not getting political.
Well, you're talking about the day part and just...
In any event, I'm saying that I think it was a mistake, and I think I should have just stuck with the comedy, and that's why we didn't do anything about this thing that happened, but I'm not going to, you know, say the name of what happened, okay?
Newtown.
What do you think he just said?
What did I just say to you, you idiot? Don't say anything about it. So,
you're not talking to him, man. He's got a plate in his head.
Yeah, but I'm not retarded.
That's true, but I'm thinking you are.
I'm just saying, he's got a plate in his head.
Don't I know it? I know, even if I didn't know what happened to him, I'd figure he'd have a plate in his head. I would somehow have to just, it would occur to me, this guy's got to have a plate in his head the way he's talking, okay? I happen to know how he got the plate in his head, but it wouldn't, you know, I don't need to.
Yeah, that's great.
Phew. Yeah.
All right, so I'm not making any sense. Why don't you guys be quiet and let me finish what I'm saying, if you don't mind. Now then, so after 9/11, I blah, 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 blah. And I said that on the air, and I made a point of saying it. If I hadn't made a point of saying that, I never would have gotten that comment from that guy.
Well, here's what I think. I think that that man felt empowered to say yay. Do you understand there's a difference, Phil? The difference is this. You are doing something, and people may want to take exception to it, but they don't want to be complainers. They like you. And they like what they like, and they don't want to bring you down, and so they keep their counsel, they don't say anything. Most of the time, they just stop listening to your rancid show. Now, I'm not saying your show is rancid now, and I'm not saying it was necessarily rancid then, but it was pretty rancid.
And by the way, one, I didn't mean to interrupt. One of the other things is, I get a lot of people saying this. I said to them, you know, all the great comedy that we did that's in our archives, and they're all, you know, talking about how the show was so fantastic then. And I say, well, if it was so fantastic then, how come, you know, we were basically still struggling for numbers and advertisers back then when you guys thought it was so freaking all this and a bag of chips, man? You know, I wouldn't be doing half the stuff I do with this radio show if I wasn't trying to find just the right mix of this, that, and something else. And then in the middle of all of that, I got to deal with what I got to deal with, the radio reality, you know, management. So then they come back with this. Well, maybe if you hadn't done the politics, but get out of here. See, so that's what I mean. Unless I say something, people don't think about it.
Well, what do you mean? They're saying now that the politics is what?
Our archives containing the gist of the radio show in its heyday, if you will. Not that the show doesn't have a heyday now, but the show is this show, it continues to evolve. And I'm glad the show isn't the way it was then. I thank God for that. I'm glad the show is what it is today. Because I can go back and listen to those old tapes. And I remember how I was listening to podcasts in those days, listening to the tape recording of the show. If the hour was good, I was really happy. But I hated to listen to what was on the other side of either hour. I didn't want to hear myself rant. I didn't want to hear anything else. And sometimes when the character hours didn't go, I wanted to, I'm telling you, man, I wanted to just sit down in the corner of a, well, I better not say,
of a library somewhere with the sheriff outside and blow your head off with a shotgun.
When I said I didn't want to say it, then why did you say it?
Because that's what you were going to say, because you were just talking about Columbine.
So you wanted to go out like the kids in Columbine. You are the most tasteless animal I think I've ever...
Did I say that?
Well, that's what they are assuming.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, but you know.
No, I don't know. No, I don't know. And besides, I'm kidding, okay? I'm not going to blow my brains out because of some freaking radio show. But nonetheless, when you articulate openly what you're thinking, how you feel the show could improve, how you feel the show could change, what you need to do, what you should do less of, what you should do more of, people hear that and it goes processing through their own brains and suddenly they think they're a genius. They got the idea, hey, we know what you should do, Phil. You should not do this, that. And this is a minority of people. Please understand. I'm not talking about... It's like one or two a month. We'll mention that.
But it gets your goat.
Doesn't get my goat. It just bugs me.
Yeah, it bugs you. And that's what that guy did today.
All right, well, whatever. So it bugs me. All right. Zero Dark Thirty is a film that has been made by Catherine Bigelow, who made the brilliant Hurt Locker. Oh, we got to take a break? We have to take a break.
God, Phil, you know what? I hope someday you are... I really hope someday you are put into a special pod that goes to hell on an hourly basis so that you'll never miss and you'll always be there.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You're turning my sound down and I'm...
We got little Ian Anderson on the line. Ian, how you doing?
Oh, hello, Mr. Ritz.
great pleasure to be on your program, sir.
Great to have you with us, pal. We got a little bit of a fuzzy line there. Margaret Gray's here.
Ian, I love you. How are you doing, darling?
I'm doing all right, Miss Gray. It's doing all right.
All right. You were calling in about the whole... You heard Margaret telling me to go to hell, huh?
Right. Well...
I didn't tell you to go to hell. I said take the next... I wish there was an hourly shuttle to hell.
Right. Well, I was listening to what she said, and it reminded me of a conversation that you and I had one time about rotten hell.
Rot in hell.
Right. Well, you see, it's like this. If you say to someone you're rotten hell, well, what you're doing is you're actually using a smaller version, right? It's a smaller version of an old English insult, which was to say to a person to rot, see? So
to just rot.
Right, just rot. Just drop into the dirt and rot, right? And like that. And that's what a lot of people in England or in my part of the world, you know, would say.
But people to know that Ian lives in the United States now. Where do you live?
I live in San Francisco. And it's, I'm up here right now where I've got a job at San Francisco State.
You're working at San Francisco State University.
That's right.
And what are you still doing the maintenance job?
It's the maintenance janitorial.
Janitorial and maintenance. All right.
That kind of bad bring on an English guy and all I can be is a janitor.
Well, it's not like that, see? It's not like that, but...
No, but I mean, if Phil brings on an English guy, he goes, yeah, here's an English guy, and guess what? He's a janitor.
It's not like that. It's not like that.
Well, what do you call it then?
I'm proud of myself, mate. I'm proud of myself. You're not proud of yourself?
I'm proud of myself. I get a beat on a radio.
Yeah, so what?
So? It doesn't mean nothing to me. It doesn't mean nothing to me at all. I'm proud of what I do. I don't have to compare myself to you. I'm not going to sit here and say Lillian Anderson's still not good or not just as good as you, because I'm just as good as you any day of the week.
Didn't say that you're not good as me. I'm saying Phil Henry had you on, make it look like every English guy going to push a broom.
I don't think it makes him look like that at all. We all know that a lot of Englishmen have done all kinds of things, good things and bad things.
Right. I mean, Ian is just a fan of the show.
I just think it's bad. I don't think you should be on a show.
Right. Well, maybe I don't think you will be on the show on account of you don't know how to ride a motorbike, and you ran your motorbike right into a tree, and you put your head through a tree. You're right, and you've turned your brains into mush. Right?
Turn my brains into mush? It's called a motorcycle, not a motorbike.
Well, I call it a motorbike. I'm going to call it a motorbike because it bothers you, right? I'll give you a good bashing. Give your mind a good bashing as you put your head through right the tree. You see?
Why do these... Don't argue with him, Ian. Don't argue with him. Talk to us. Because all Bud likes to do is stir people up.
I'm not stirring nobody up. I'm coming to his defense. You being on a show like this.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that I'm hurting him on purpose by having him on the show?
I just don't think you understand to have a guy on who's a janitor.
That's right. What's wrong with me being a janitor? I'm not talking to people about you with a plate in your head. I'm not saying how come Phil Henry has a plate head on, right? I'm not saying Phil Henry has a plate head on there. Am I saying that?
No.
All right, I could. I go on another radio show, get my own radio show, which I'm going to do someday. You wait and see.
Yeah, ha, 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 ha. You're not going to have your own radio show as a janitor.
Well, I have a radio show before you do, because they put me on, and I talk like people understand me. I can talk like people understand what I'm saying, and not like I got a mouthful of mush like you. See?
All right, look at guys, this is not going to, you know, prove anything.
Mouthful of mush? You're talking like an English person. Nobody understands you.
I understand him, and I understand you. Now shut up.
Anyway, I was saying that now I lost my place and everything.
Ian, that's all right. You were talking about how I was telling Phil to take a shuttle to hell.
Right, a shuttle to hell. And basically, when I was talking to Mr. Henry, he said, where'd rotten hell come from? And I said, it comes from rot. Why don't you rot? You know? And that's how that comes from.
Big deal. You come on the program and...
You shut up, Bud, before I start beating your ass.
God, that sounds gay.
Oh, my God.
I'm gonna go and let you go, Miss Henry. Listen to this. Not only this fairy, this nutter, and he sounds like a fruit, too.
Why'd you hang up on him?
I'm trying to save him from himself. Come on, like a janitor and everything like that. Calling me a nutter.
You are a nutter. It's exactly what you are.
I'm not going to be a nutter much longer if you let her keep kicking my testicles in.
Oh. Would you ask him to leave, please? No, on second thought, I'll leave.
Well, it's the end of the show, so I'll let her go. Bud, you're out of control. You're saying stuff that you shouldn't say. You don't pay attention to me. You don't take my direction. You're jumping in and butting in and saying all kinds of stuff, and it's pissing me off. You understand? And, you know, it's one thing if you got an opinion about some guy talking about how he shouldn't be on the show because he's making an ass out of himself. What, are you jealous of him or something?
What am I jealous of a janitor for?
Well, I don't know. Why are you then? Then why would you...
Because I don't think it doesn't make him look good.
So that's his decision. He'll come on here if he wants to come on. Anyway, I'm going to take a break. I want to remind you that we're online at philhenryshow.com, philhenryshow.com. A backstage pass gets you access to thousands of hours of archive material, as well as our video cast, as well as our Saturday night show, and so much more. And if you get a backstage pass this month, the month of December, for 1 month, you get one free Best of CD download at our shop. For 6 months, you get three free Best of CD downloads. And for 1 year, you get five Best of free CD downloads. If you get your shop orders in before 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, we're going to pick up the cost of the handling. So get your shop orders in before 10 a.m. this morning. And go over to the website. It's explained in full over there. But we got a deal for you if you get your orders in before 10 a.m. this morning. Capiche? Beauty! Phil Henry Show until tonight. Let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Henry.